Between 1969 and 1976, something extraordinary happened in the fruit orchards south of San Francisco. While America was tearing itself apart over Vietnam and social upheaval, a handful of restless innovators were quietly building the future. They created five entirely new industries in just 7 years: personal computing, video games, biotechnology, advanced semiconductors, and modern venture capital. Think about that for a moment. Five foundational industries that now underpin nearly everything we do, all emerging from the same place at the same time. This wasn't the work of solitary geniuses locked in labs. It was a story of collaboration, risk-taking, and generational handoffs, semiconductor pioneers passing the torch to younger visionaries who would put computers in our homes and pockets. By 1969, the Santa Clara Valley was transforming at breakneck speed. Newcomers arrived every 15 minutes for 20 straight years, turning bucolic farmland into suburban sprawl. The population tripled to over a million. Paradise was being paved over, but something remarkable was taking root in its place. Bob Taylor left the Pentagon in 1969 after demonstrating the first computer network, the seed of the internet. Uncomfortable supporting an unjust war, he headed west to Xerox PARC, where his lab invented the future: graphical interfaces, the mouse, networked personal computers. Xerox executives, fixated on photocopiers, would largely ignore these breakthroughs. Meanwhile, Al Alcorn escaped Berkeley's chaos for Ampex, meeting Ted Dabney and Nolan Bushnell. Together, they founded Atari and launched the video game industry. Their Pong prototype, installed at Andy Capp's Tavern, broke down when the coin box overflowed with quarters, about $100 worth. People lined up at 9 a.m. to play. Within 6 months, Atari sold 7,000 machines at $1,100 each. Sandy Kurtzig sold computer time at Bell Labs until her boss removed her from a successful account for hurting mainframe sales. Homesick for California, she told her reluctant husband, "I'm going back. You can come with me, or I'll go by myself." Back west, she founded ASK Computer Systems, working from home with a pink briefcase and lavender business cards, discovering after her son's birth that she wasn't the kind that can stay at home and talk baby talk. Mike Markula retired from Intel at 33 with $2.25 million from stock options, 4 years ahead of schedule. Bored by retirement, he missed interacting with bright, fiery-eyed entrepreneurs and began offering free Monday consultations to startups. In fall 1976, venture capitalist Don Valentine connected him with two guys named Steve working out of a garage. When Markula visited Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, he broke his Monday-only rule. Despite their unconventional appearance, he recognized genius. Wozniak's computer displayed color graphics, played games, included built-in programming, and featured an ingeniously designed circuit board. "It was spectacularly good," Markula recalled 40 years later. "There wasn't a wasted bit anywhere. Apple was profitable, but chaotic, operating from a garage with arbitrary pricing and no business plan. When the founders failed to write one, Markula did it himself." His calculations projected $500 million in annual sales within a decade, faster growth than any company he knew. After consulting his wife, he committed to 4 years, investing $91,000 for 26% equity and personally guaranteeing a $250,000 credit line. Apple incorporated on January 3, 1977. In summer 1974, Niels Reimers at Stanford's Office of Technology Licensing read about labs transplanting frog genes into bacteria, which then replicated the foreign DNA. The implications were staggering. Bacteria could potentially produce insulin, antibiotics, or other valuable substances. Reimers contacted Stanford scientist Stanley Cohen about patenting the technique. Cohen hesitated, citing ethical concerns. It built on others' work and used public funding. But Cohen's collaborator, Herb Boyer at UCSF, had isolated an enzyme that could clip DNA strands. Together, they'd created a process where recombinant DNA could reproduce as bacterial cells divided, a breakthrough that brought Boyer to tears. With 2 months before publication would invalidate any patent claim, Reimers hired an attorney who drafted the application in 3 weeks. On November 11, 1974, 1 week before the deadline, Stanford filed for process and composition for biologically functional molecular chimeras, a remarkably broad patent claiming techniques for cloning virtually all possible DNAs in all possible ways. Robert Swanson, a 28-year-old recently fired from venture capital, cold-called scientists asking when recombinant DNA could be commercialized. Most gave vague answers, until he reached Herb Boyer, who boldly stated it could happen within a few years. This led to Genentech, the world's first biotechnology company. On October 14, 1980, Genentech's IPO opened at $35 and hit $89 in 20 minutes. Swanson and Boyer's original $500 investments were each worth about $65 million. The early 1980s marked Silicon Valley's golden age of electronics, adding 50,000 jobs annually for 3 years and accounting for 1/5 of all new U.S. jobs. High-tech employment surged 77% between 1974-1980, fueled by policy changes. Capital gains tax dropped from 49% to 28%, and relaxed pension fund rules unleashed over $500 million for venture capitalists. Atari became a prestigious employer where programmers enjoyed complete creative control, with games expected to go from concept to production in 6 months. By 1983, video games had thoroughly penetrated American culture, with Warner stock soaring 3,000% in 6 years. Then, everything crashed. In June, Warner announced losses of $310 million in 3 months, over $3 million daily. By year's end, Atari had lost approximately $500 million, a devastating reversal from the previous year's $323 million profit. Bob Taylor's tenure at Xerox PARC ended bitterly in 1983. Despite leading the team that developed revolutionary Alto personal computers, he was locked out of the Futures Day demonstration, forced to sneak in through a loading dock. After 13 years and conflicts with PARC's director, Taylor resigned. Within 8 months, over half the technical staff left, with 15 joining Taylor at DEC. Facebook's Silicon Valley headquarters sits on land once occupied by Sun Microsystems. Mark Zuckerberg preserved Sun's logo on the reverse side of Facebook's thumbs up sign, a warning that even giants can disappear through complacency. Sun exemplifies Silicon Valley's generational innovation chain. Founded in 1982, it reached $1 billion in sales in 6 years, drawing from Xerox PARC technology, Kleiner Perkins investment, and Stanford resources. Despite marketing itself as the dot in dot-com, Sun crashed when dot-com companies canceled orders. Oracle acquired it in 2010 for $7.4 billion. Sun's legacy persists through its Java programming language and alumni network, former CEOs of Google, Yahoo, and Motorola. Co-founder Andy Bechtolsheim wrote a $100,000 check to Google Inc. before it was incorporated. This cross-generational support network represents Silicon Valley's distinctive contribution. The innovation genealogy runs deep. Stanford and PARC begat Sun. Fairchild begat Intel, which through Markula begat Apple. Stanford spawned Cisco, Google, HP. The region's vitality stems largely from immigrants. 37% of residents are foreign-born. These troublemakers didn't just build companies, they built the infrastructure of modern life. Their legacy lives in the model they created. Take risks, collaborate across boundaries, support the next generation, never stop reinventing. Their revolution continues, wave after wave, generation after generation.